Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, this is Craig. If you like this show and you want to support it and you want to keep it free, head on over to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/support. If you're a business owner and you want to increase your cash flow, or if you're a label or artist and you want to promote new music, then listen up. For information about advertising on Everyone Loves Guitar, including information on geographically targeted ads, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. If you want to buy or sell a home or investment property and you're here in the Tampa Bay area, in Hillsboro, Pinellas, or Pasco counties, then listen up. West Florida Real Estate is a local residential real estate broker that's helped over 250 Bay Area homeowners buy and sell their properties in the last 4 years alone. If you're looking to sell, you'll want to get their free report, The 7 Biggest Mistakes Homeowners Make When Hiring a Realtor. And if you're looking to buy a property, you definitely want to get your hands on The 21 Most Expensive Mistakes Tampa Home Buyers Make When Buying a Home. Each one of these reports is going to save you time and money. Inside, you'll discover the 7 most important things to consider when hiring a realtor, what to do if you're buying and selling a home at the same time, and the danger of choosing a realtor who agrees with everything you say. To get your hands on these free reports, head on over to westfloridarealestate.com. That's westfloridarealestate.com. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. We have got a really successful guitarist and writer with us. He's from the UK. Funny as hell, because we just spent the last 3 hours talking. We're with Marco Peroni. He's an English guitarist, songwriter, and record producer who's done a ton of work with Adam Ant and Adam and the Ants, Sinead O'Connor, Susie and the Banshees, Phil Collins, The Slits, and loads of other people from the late 70s to the present day where he's still producing. He was a key member of the UK punk scene coming up. His first appearance on stage was as a member of Susie and the Banshees in their debut gig in 1976 at the 100 Club Punk Festival. Is this true, or Sid Vicious was on drums?
Yes, it is true.
Okay, I have to ask you about that. In 1980, he teamed up with Adam and the Ants as a lead guitarist and co-songwriter. He co-wrote two UK number one singles and 4 top 10 hits with Adam Ant. The two albums that he co-wrote with Adam and the Ants for Adam and the Ants were Kings of the Wild Frontier and Prince Charming. Both of them made the top 10 in the UK albums chart. Kings was number one and Prince Charming was number two. When the band disbanded in 1982, Marco stayed on as Adam Ant's co-writer. They produced another number one single, which is Goody Two Shoes, and an album, which is Friend or Foe, followed by, dig this, 9 more top 20 hits. Adam and Marco won 2 shared Ivor Novello awards for Stand and Deliver. So if my math is correct, you've had like 200 singles in the top 20, or no, something like that. You've had a hell of a lot of hits, man.
I think we've had ones in other countries as well.
That's awesome. There's different recognition in different countries, from what I understand.
Different levels of, you know, you have to sell different amounts to get those gold records that you used to get and now you don't get.
Do you have like a whole room full of gold?
My mum has. I don't have them. Yeah. I think it's really, it's really suspect when people have those things up on their walls at home.
Yeah. That's cute that your mom has them though. Because I could see like my wife holding that kind of shit for our kids.
Is it traditional that your mum has them? That used to be the traditional pop style thing to do in the 70s.
Right. Yeah, man.
I think it's very suspect. I mean, probably rappers do it, don't they? They put it up their gold albums, their awards, and have them at home.
I've interviewed a few guys that have had gold records. Not many, though, to be honest with you. Not many. More don't have them than have them, you know?
Yeah. I played guitar on the last Shakespeare's Sister single.
Say that again?
I played guitar on the last Shakespeare's Sister single, the one they put out a couple of weeks ago.
Awesome.
I think I took my guitar off without telling you.
So let me finish this up. Marco and Adam working together have sold more than 18 million records worldwide, with number one hits in Australia, Germany, Greece, Sweden, Israel, and Japan, as well as the UK. In 87, Marco featured on Sinead O'Connor's debut album called The Lion and the Cobra. He subsequently worked on her other albums, I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got, that was a huge one, and Universal Mother. He co-wrote and played guitar on a number of tracks on her album, How About I Be Me and You Be You, which was released in March 2012. Most recently, he's worked as a consultant on the punk movement, both on record and in print. He worked on two major compilations, Punk and Dread Meets the Punk Rockers Uptown, and he released Sex, Too Fast to Live, Too Young to Die, and I'm making a mess. Biba, which is Champagne and Novocaine on his own label, Only Lovers Left Alive. Is that the name of your record label, Only Lovers Left Alive?
Yes.
That's a freaking really cool name, man.
I nicked it from somewhere. I can't remember where I nicked it from.
Isn't everything nicked from somewhere? Starting with the blues.
Yeah.
He played on the Slits out EP, Revenge of the Killer Slits, in 2006. He was recently a member of the Wolfmen with Chris Constantino. They released one EP, several singles, and they wrote music for television ads and released a debut album called Modernity Killed Every Night.
We released two albums.
And there's Married to the Eiffel. God, you got some really cool names. Modernity Killed Every Night. That's great. Good.
I found out you can't copy.
You can't copyright a name?
Hey?
You can't copyright a name of a song?
You can't copyright titles.
Oh, that's cool.
Unless it's something like Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club, I mean, that is particularly, you can't say that's a generic title.
There's going to be like 200 singles out after people hear this called I Shot the Sheriff or something like that, you know?
but they could be. And, you know, as long as you're not claiming, it's marvelous.
Boys and girls, fair game. What's that?
How many tracks were there called The Right Stuff?
Man, it's probably a bunch.
Yeah, there were loads suddenly. Oh, The Right Thing. Do The Right Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but can you take one that's a big hit?
No, I can't think of one that's a big hit. Loads of tracks called Do The Right Thing.
Let me just finish this up. And Marco collaborated with another UK band called Headcount on their album Lullabies for Dogs, another great name, with getting co-writing and production credits. And he previously worked on their 2002 debut album called It's a Business Doing Pleasure with You. Dude, you are the name. That's the business for you, man. You're a name. You should be a name consultant on titles, man.
I didn't think of that.
I'm seeing a second wind for you here, man. What is it called? An Indian summer in this consulting. Hey, man, you came up in the punk scene and you're still involved in it. How did you first get turned on to that kind of music?
Well, I'm not involved in it because it doesn't exist. I mean, it doesn't really exist then. So, how do I get involved? I didn't get involved because it wasn't there. It just sort of happened around me. I was just standing there and it sort of kind of happened.
How'd you get attracted to it?
Wasn't attracted to it. I was standing in this particular space with other people and other people started doing it. I wasn't attracted to it. I was there. I was attracted to the people who then went on to do it.
Okay.
I wasn't attracted to it because I hadn't started doing it yet.
Right. So what was the common thread that all these people and yourself shared?
a complete inability to fit into society as it was.
And
inability
punk,
and desire.
And punk was the outlet to express that.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. We didn't know that, though. None of these decisions were ever made, you know. All these kind of things were put on after.
What do you mean, put on after?
Well, these were kind of like you kind of just lived your life, and then later on, other people decided that that's what you were doing while you were living this life.
Okay. Okay.
You were not doing this, and you go, "Oh, was I? Yeah, that's what you were doing. Oh, I see."
Okay, so there was no, it wasn't like a movement like Occupy, you know, Wall Street, where you're all trying to accomplish something. It was just,
no.
Okay, I totally get it.
I mean, if it was a movement, it had even vaguer aims than Occupy. at least they know they're a movement. They don't know what they're doing, but
that's funny.
Look, we're going to be a movement. We don't actually know what our aims are. We didn't even know we were a movement.
Right. I totally get it, man.
We didn't even want to be one.
Yeah, because that's
said,
yeah.
If someone said, look, you people are a movement, you say, get out. I don't want to be anything to do with these people. I hate them.
I totally get what you're saying, man. What was your first break in the music business?
I suppose Susan the Banshees thing, but that wasn't the music business. That was sort of anti-music business. It was really literally anti-music. It was literally not music at all.
But that was your first sort of like thing that became hot.
Yeah.
Were you always, did you always write, like even as a youngster when you first started playing?
I always had tunes in my head. I don't know if I ever kind of translated them into music much. I never had any reason to until someone kind of made me.
Sure. What was the motivating? You said someone made you, but what was that trigger that made you say, "Hey, man, let me put these things down and get them out there"?
When you joined the band and said, well, we need to make some music, we can't do covers. I mean, in England, I mean, and I know that in America, it's tradition to start up as a covers band, but in England, you don't. And also, with punk bands, we couldn't play anything, so we couldn't learn anything. So you had to just make up your own kind of music.
So talk about that first, the debut gig, where it's, how is Sid Vicious get involved with you guys? And what the hell was that all about? What was he like?
It was really funny. Really good. I mean, I really liked him. He became obviously less likable. but he was actually very likable and very goofy and silly.
Yeah.
Strange and sort of ironic. It was just, I mean, the whole him of being, you know, Sid Vicious was a complete joke. He wasn't vicious at all. I mean, that was the idea of the name.
Right.
It was just stupid. Why he became involved, he was just forced to be involved, actually. But Malcolm, he just said, "You're a band." And that's what kind of happened in those days. Someone would say, "You're a band and you're on stage on Tuesday, whether you wanted to be or not."
Right.
There was no kind of that's one of the good things about punk. Maybe the best thing about punk is that there was no sitting about going, "Oh, we've got to be really good. Ooh, if we go in front of an audience, you know, or what happens if they don't like us?" That was right out the window. It doesn't matter if they don't. Like, they're not going to like us.
Right. Yeah.
There's no way they're going to like us because we're shit. I mean, if you start off with that premise. We are shit, right? We're going to be shit. There's no way we're not going to be shit because we've never picked up guitars before. In fact, let's just go one better. Let's just try and be shit as we can. And this is the best bit. So if we start from that premise, let's try and be shit as we can. Everyone's going to hate us anyway. Then nothing matters.
So it really just kind of like allowed you to just enjoy whatever the hour you had to play.
It does. It allows you to do whatever you want. And no, it doesn't. And all, you know, all fears and worries are out the window. It's like, you know, is this the end of my career? You never had one. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's wild.
And also, you would never be here. You'd be sitting at home like trying to learn, you know, Show Me the Way by Peter Frampton, which you'll never be able to play.
Yeah.
And if you could play it, somebody else plays it better than you anyway.
Okay, so how did you guys find, if this whole music was new at the time, how did you find clubs? Like, what kind of clubs would book punk bands?
We didn't find them. it was a guy called Andrew Schazowski, who was, I think, was supposed to be Malcolm's accountant, but I don't think he really was.
When you say Malcolm, just for the listeners.
Malcolm McLaren.
Yeah.
Malcolm McLaren, which was accountant. That's who I always thought he was, but actually maybe he wasn't. Decided that there were enough. In fact, there weren't enough bands. That was a problem. He decided there was a gay club in Covent Garden, which is now a very she shopping centre of London, and then wasn't. It was just like a kind of just completely just derelict, awful place. There was a gay club in the middle of it called Shagarama. So I don't know why it was called Shagarama.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. For everybody listening, that it does, shag means fucking in England.
It was horrible. I did go a couple of times because actually you went to gay clubs, not because you were gay, but it was the only place you could go to that, you know, addressing the way you did. It was the sort of underground yeah. scene.
Right.
So you didn't have to listen to disco music or mix with people who liked football, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, he took over this club and decided this would be the new punk club for a new movement of bands, which didn't actually exist. So, and he would put on bands every night. And I'm thinking, well, Andy, there's only about four bands. I mean, you're going to be out of bands in 4 days. And really what it was, he was managing Generation X, and he just wanted to put them on something because no one would have these bands on. So you had to hire your own club to put them on.
It sounds a lot like kind of like CBGB's in New York.
Yeah, it was a bit like that, yeah. Except a lot more amateur, because the people running CBGB's had a long-running history of putting on. It was professional. It was a bar. It was a long-standing bar with, you know, that people went to. None of these people had any experience putting anything on.
But the bands they put on, they were the exact – when they started putting punk bands on, they were bands that did not have their shit together. They were just like – the attitude was, just, you know, the same. Like, yeah.
Didn't have equipment.
Yeah, yeah, right.
School children, the people of 15, so they shouldn't have been there. They weren't old enough to get in.
Right, right.
So age between
15. That's wild. So,
I mean, that's what people sort of forget, you know, how young everybody was.
Yeah.
Mostly school children.
You weren't with Susie for a long time, were you?
No, 20 minutes.
Yeah, what happened there? I mean, not to be, I don't want, like, I'm not looking for gossip, just like.
No, well, I don't know. We just didn't really kind of want to continue. We didn't really know each other, so we didn't really want to continue that.
Yeah. And how'd you hook up with Adam Ant?
Hello?
Hey, I'm here. You got me?
Go on. So what'd you say?
How did you hook up with Adam Ant?
Oh, that was years later, but it was a strange sort of thing where he'd been. It was a Malcolm again, who kind of, and one of his great, Malcolm's great, terrific own goals. When he threw Adam out of his own band,
which was Adam and the Ants.
Yeah, so he threw him out of, and he sort of, Adam just found out. Well, I didn't really know, but he was, and sort of said, I've been thrown out of Atom and the Ants. So I was like, what? Say that again.
Yeah. Because
you said, look, never mind. I just I'll explain when I see
you. Oh, so you guys knew each other.
Right. And, you know, basically Malcolm really wanted the three guys to be Bow Wow Wow. Lee, Dave and Matthew, didn't really want to work. I mean, that thing of Adam Ayres just seemed to be like kind of dead run its course and they weren't getting on and everything. And, you know, and they were only too happy to go and do something else. They didn't really want to work with Adam. That was pretty clear. And, Malcolm being Malcolm got them to fire Adam. Malcolm wasn't going to fire Adam.
Usually it's the other way around, isn't it? Usually the band members go to the manager and say, hey, can you fire this guy for us?
Yeah. But then again, it wasn't Malcolm's place, was it?
Yeah.
It's not his band.
Right.
If he told him, your singer, your place is firing, not me.
Right.
So that was it. So he came and said, oh, I've got this... something else, you know. Got to start all over again, almost all over again. But you know, I've got this audience, I've got this following, and that's when that started. So that's when, yeah, that was it, and we became Adam and the Ants, and they went off to become Bow Wow Wow.
Did you guys have that good writing chemistry right away, early on? Or did that develop over time?
Yeah. I mean, I've never really thought about it, but yes, we just started. It just started and it just happened because we had, without ever really discussing, like, you know, do we have anything in common? We just did. We actually did have almost all exactly the same influences to varying degrees. Almost exactly the same without ever, ever, ever really discussing it.
So it was just one of those, I guess, serendipity, I guess you call it, or something like that. Yeah. That's really cool. How did life change before all the big hits and afterwards? Like, I don't mean, of course, you got a bunch of money, but which always changes. But how was your world different before and afterwards?
Well, from which point? What, from living with my mother?
oh man. Okay, so let me ask.
Living in central London in my own penthouse. Okay. I no longer live with my mother. Well, I see her a lot, so it didn't really for a while.
Okay, so let me ask a more specific question. Not like your lifestyle, but what was, a better question is, what was the good, the bad, and the ugly about going from, you know, where we don't know what the fuck we're doing in these clubs to now we're on stage all over the world and we have massive hits?
There was nothing I would say, gosh, I wish we were back in those shit clubs earning no money.
What's that? I wish you can go back there.
I wish there was nobody here. I wish we were doing really badly. There was no point.
Okay, what was the biggest thing that overwhelmed you that maybe you had to learn how to handle? Or because look, when you started, you're a kid, right? And then you have this massive, that's a lot of stuff to take on.
It really doesn't happen overnight. It is actually fairly gradual. And the more it happens, the more you're isolated. You know, and a lot of self you want to be kind of isolated because you spend a lot of the early years to get that point on tour.
Yeah,
you don't really go home very much. You don't really go anywhere. You're just really kind of in the bus or in planes or on stage or in, you know. And I mean, I read some stupid article about David Bowie, and a guy was doing station to station tour, and he kind of put his feet up, and the interviewer looked at the bottom of his soles of his shoes, and he sort of said, "The soles of his shoes were scuffed." So he suddenly thought, "Oh, this is the life of a rock star." Because he doesn't seem to walk anywhere. Well, where the fuck would he walk? Where would he go? I mean, it's like, you know, he's on tour. He only ever walks with a foyer into a concert hall, does the concert, back onto a bus, back to a foyer, and, you know, then in the morning back onto the bus. I mean, where does he walk? Yeah. Where would he go? Where do you go? Where do you think we go? We're, walk around where?
Yeah.
You spent months doing that life.
So you were like non-stop touring.
Yeah, well, that's what you do. You non-stop tour for nearly 2 years. And in that time, in that 2 years, that is your life. You spend your life in the bus, in the plane, in hotels, in press conferences, a bit of time you spend at home, but not very much. But and then when you are at home, you just stay at home because you don't really go out. Because being at home is actually a holiday.
Right. Yeah. So
where do you think we would walk to?
Yeah. I totally get it. What? Okay. Once this, what was some of the cooler things that you experienced during this time, either like cool places you visited or just interesting?
I mean, the whole thing is kind of like, I mean, it's completely, I mean, looking back on it, I didn't really think much of it. I mean, I didn't really think much about a lot about it at the time, but it is, you are basically carried around. Somebody else does your tickets for you. Somebody else checks you in. Somebody else carries your bag. Somebody else tells you where to go. Somebody else pays you the ticket. But in fact, you are in fact paying for the ticket. But it doesn't seem like that. You don't never have to look.
Yeah.
Money, but it's your money that's paying for it. But and you go to wonderful places. And sometimes you don't go to very wonderful, you go to really awful places, but you don't see them.
Right.
You're never there very long to get bored. I mean, you do get bored, but you don't have to spend 2 weeks in Dortmund or anything like that.
Right. What was the coolest place you went to?
Well, I mean, the whole of America was amazing for any young teenager, because you saw all of it.
Yeah.
All of it, over and over again. Japan, I mean, Australia. I mean, you know, just seeing the world. Yeah. Seeing the world is amazing. Which I think it's essential for anybody, really.
You know, it's funny. I spoke with, in fact, her interview came out today, I think, Joan Armatrading.
Oh, yeah.
And I asked her, I think, the same question. I said, "You've been all over the world. What's been your favorite places?" And she said, "America." Yeah,
I don't know if it's my favorite. I haven't got a favorite place. I mean, I loved New York for a good part of the 80s, and then wasn't enamored with it anymore. I'm a big city person, so you know, Paris or Rome or Tokyo, any sort of all the major cities.
Sure.
I love.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm a terrible person to go on. I never go on holiday. I hate holidays.
Really? It's because it's too. You like being in the pulse, traffic. Yeah.
I have no reason to go on holiday. Why would I go on holiday?
No. Yeah.
Well, I don't actually work. I don't actually.
What? Tell me.
But that's the thing. I haven't really actually ever worked. Not really.
Like a job.
No, I've never had a job. I mean, obviously, I didn't really like being on tour a lot of the time. I could have walked from any of those tours. I mean, you know, but I didn't have a boss who was going to shout at me. Well, actually, lots of people were going to shout at me. But
Right.
There would be an enormous amount of pissed off people. But I mean, I could have done it anytime. I wouldn't do it because, I'd be fucking people up.
If you could answer this, what are the top three musical experiences you had and why?
I loved recording the Friend or Foe album. It just seemed to be a time when I think it's a horrible thing to say. We didn't have the band around, and it was just kind of me and Adam.
So you felt a deeper connection with the music or more control and over what you wanted musically?
Not more control. It was just easier to work with. You know, things were just flowing.
So you played most of the instruments on that?
No, we both did. Well, he played most of the instruments. I just played guitar. He played sort of everything else except drums. He tried to play drums, and it just didn't work. That was a funny thing. I had seen this documentary about Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
And it was a thing about Buddy Holly and the Crickets. And I can't remember the name of his drummer. Forget his drummer. And he said he actually played drums on one of those great tracks with cardboard boxes. And I thought, oh, that sounds brilliant. Let's try that. And we went to the demo studio, and I said to Adam, do you mind playing drums on cardboard boxes? And I said, no, I'd love to play some drums on cardboard boxes. It sounded brilliant. And it just sounded brilliant. I thought, this is it. We're going to do drums. You're going to play drums on the end with cardboard boxes. And he said, okay.
Holy shit.
And in those days, you couldn't take – your demos with you, and we had the multi-track. I don't know, actually, we should have just bloody used those tracks, shouldn't we? It just didn't work. It didn't, and we went to another studio, and it just didn't work.
With the cardboard boxes?
It didn't work. It didn't sound the same.
What's your frame of reference for where to place a mic when you're using cardboard boxes?
I don't know. I don't know, but we weren't doing anything new. This was a traditional method. This is traditional, tried and tested method from the 50s. And I kept saying, look, I've seen it on telly. I'm telling you.
I've seen it on telly.
I've seen it on telly.
Yeah.
I just done it on telly. And then when we heard it, it was like, that is brilliant. It didn't work. No, it was a sort of, just lo-fi, kind of rough and raw.
Thud.
Yeah, it was just sort of rockabilly sound, which didn't translate, didn't work.
That's wild, man. Okay, so number one was recording Friend or Foe, you and Adam in the studio. What's number two, musical experience?
I like doing Viva La Rock with Tony Visconti. That was good. Although, funnily enough, for a few back guitars, I felt we made me do too many guitars.
You broke up. What recording?
He got me to record too many guitars because it was a strange sort of thing where I'd reached this epiphany where it's like this. There was this strange thing where you kind of like when you do your first album, you are recognized or as knowing absolutely fucking nothing. No one listens to you.
Right.
2 weeks later, when your first single comes out, so. When your first single comes out, you know nothing, right? You know absolutely nothing. No one listens to you. You're an idiot.
Right.
2 weeks later, when it goes to number four, or then possibly number one, in the space of 2 weeks, you're a genius and you know everything.
You're a genius. So, yeah, that's funny.
You become a genius. So suddenly in the studio, all the things that you said 2 weeks before, and no one took any notice. Everybody takes notice.
Wow. That's funny, man.
wrong.
That's really
still wrong.
That's really wild.
What they were telling me 2 weeks before, which is you can't, don't put so many guitars, and all that happens is just the bloody, it just gets smaller and smaller. They were right. Don't put so many guitars in. I know you want a big sound, but all that's happening is this, and they were explaining this to me, the sound is getting smaller.
Sure.
They were, whoever explained this to me, he was an experienced engineer. But unfortunately, I'd have a hit record over the next 2 weeks. So when I was right, then I had to be listened to.
So you were the genius all of a sudden.
Yeah, and I was completely wrong.
Crazy, man. Isn't that wild?
When I went to the Visconti, I learned I was completely wrong. And I was saying, Tony, I think they're putting too many guitars on. I think they're getting smaller. And he said, oh, no, put more guitars on.
That's
and he was like, his one thing to make me do anything was like, I did this with Mark Boland, right? We did it with Mark Boland, and I must do it too.
Yeah, that's wild.
Anything you do with Mark Boland, I must do. Because I'm a big believer in like, anything your hero does, you must do too. And that if it worked for them, it worked for you.
And did it?
It's complete nonsense. I mean, it's just like, it doesn't work at all.
It's amazing. And what would be number three?
I really, really liked working with Sinead, actually. She was another person who sort of taught me a lot in simplicity. Because I was like, oh, can we change? I always like, kind of change it now? She's, well, why do you want to change it? I don't know, because I just want to. You know, it was like, and she was just like completely just one take everything. First take is not always the way to go, but getting everything perfect is not always the way to go. And also, keeping everything, there's two schools of thought, like keeping everything completely rough or keeping everything perfect.
Well, yeah.
You've got to judge. Everything's got to be judged on its own merits. You can't just say, no, I want everything, rough or everything perfect. Basically, is this any good?
How'd you connect with her in the first place?
I was a friend of her manager's.
And she was getting ready to get into the studio and they recommended you?
Lion and the Cobra. And she wasn't there. She was pregnant at the time. With Jake. So I went down. And just typical kind of like, to play guitar on Mendinka and some other things like that. No guidance at all. It's like, what do you want? I said, what do you want to do? So, well, I'll just do it. And like, a manager fucking was like, well, whatever you'd like. okay. But this is, all right. And I'm like, I get it. So sometimes it's like that. People haven't really got a clue, whatever you'd like.
So you had total discretion over the recordings here, over your part of the recordings.
Yeah. That's the discretion you sometimes don't want.
Why is that? Because you want to have some.
It's not my album, is it?
right.
This is not my album, and I'm making. You ask me to come play guitar, and it's like, what would you like me to do? Well, anything you'd like. Well, I don't know, actually.
Yeah. How did you sort out what you were going to do?
Well, I had to make it up. I had to decide. I had to make creative decisions for people I'd never met. Which is very good.
Yeah.
If you're doing things that other people, particularly people you've never met, you kind of want them to like it, don't you?
Yeah, for sure, man, of course.
It's not your record and you've never met them and just a friend of yours, you kind of, well, I want them to like it. I don't want to do something they don't like.
Yeah, of course.
But it's not my record.
But it wound up working well with you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we did that big American tour when she insulted Frank Sinatra and everybody, well, she insulted basically everybody in America. So I didn't think it was a good idea, but never mind.
Where did you grow up in London?
Yeah.
And your folks were from Italy originally, right?
Yeah.
That's very cool, man. Did you know early on that you were going to play guitar or that you wanted to play guitar?
No. I didn't know early on.
What did you think you were going to do?
I have no idea. I was a bit scared growing up because I knew that I had no way at all of fitting into the world at all. It didn't seem to be very interesting.
Wow. So what? Okay. Thinking back then, why did you feel that way? Just the uncomfortableness of growing up as a kid?
Nothing seemed to appeal.
Yeah.
That makes any sense. That world, it didn't seem to, I thought I know at some point, any year now, I'm going to have to stop playing with toys. I'm fucking hell, what am I going to do then? But then what am I going to do?
Interesting, man.
It is not seeming to be very interesting out there. I was also an only child, so I was left to my own devices and thoughts a lot.
Do you know who Richard Lloyd is?
Yes.
So I'm reading he's coming on my show in about a month. And for people listening, Richard is the guitar player from Television. They're a great alternative. I hate to use that word. I guess they'd call it punk back then. It's not, or
not whatever. Punk at all.
No, it wasn't punk. It was like Talking Heads, whatever that was called back in the '70s. I don't know what I hate to use that word alternative, but I guess that's what they were calling it back. I don't even know.
I don't even know what it was because it's not in any way progressive rock, but it's intricate, but it's not.
It doesn't have the not savagery of punk. But it doesn't have the. It had a lot more structure than punk, you know.
It's intricate, but it's not impossible to play. It's not like you couldn't ever play it.
Correct. It was kind of like what did they call the Police? It was like the rough version of the Police. I don't know what that music was called back then. I don't remember. They would just call everything.
That was called New Wave.
So that was okay. So it was probably called New Wave, as much as I hate to use that word because it's really
it's not at all.
But the reason why I brought him up is he was an only child. I'm reading his book. He wrote a really good autobiography. Oh my God, this guy has been there and done it. Like, everything, the rock and roll lifestyle. But he was an only child and he had those same exact feelings. And as a young kid, he would look around at the adults around him and just, you know, sort of like life in general and say, man, this looks pretty fucking bleak as a young kid. And almost the same definitely the same vibe when you just said it. He said, and he just gravitated to guitar and that was there.
There were some aspects that weren't bleak, and I can't remember what they were. Sort of some aspects of TV that wasn't bleak. I knew there was some work. I had this feeling that the world I was watching wasn't really real. The world that I thought was exciting wasn't really real. I didn't think, obviously, like, you know, James Bond wasn't really real, but.
James Bond is real, though. No, I'm just. I do that with my kids sometimes, even today, and they're like, "Dad, you're not serious, are you?" But
I mean, I grew up with spies, and
But
spies living a glamorous lifestyle. I mean, I knew that wasn't real, but I can't really explain it. But that's the only. That swinging London thing wasn't really real. It wasn't really swinging.
It wasn't really swinging. I always think of Austin Powers whenever I hear that word swinging.
Yeah, but that wasn't really happening really the way that Austin tries to.
It wasn't. That's interesting. I didn't realize that. What kind of work did your dad do?
He ran a restaurant. Yeah, they owned a restaurant.
Okay. So it sounds like he had a pretty normal childhood.
Yeah.
See, this guy
it was sort of normal except that because my parents worked a lot, anybody would tell you that anybody sort of, if they had parents who owned a restaurant,
oh, that's tough.
They never bloody come home.
Yeah, toughest business ever.
Yeah, it's really odd. I don't know why anyone would actually want to do it.
Yeah.
They just never come out. So I was left with my grandmother a lot. She was also Italian.
Did you grow up speaking Italian then?
Sort of, but I didn't speak Italian. So I lived in Camden Town, which was at the time, it wasn't super rough. It's not like the East End or anything like that. But it wasn't, I don't know, it's not the sort of place you could go. I mean, yeah, you could play in the street as a kid.
Yeah.
I did play in the street as a kid. It sounds like it all kind of like, you know, like Cockney East End things. So it was not the East End. It wasn't particularly rough, I don't think, but it wasn't particularly nice either.
Yeah. Was that near Hackney by any chance?
Eh?
Was that near Hackney?
No, it's nowhere near Hackney.
Do you know
who? It's near King's Cross.
Oh, I actually know where that is. That's the railroad station.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually was there.
We actually lived behind King's Cross Station.
So right now, like I was there quite a while ago, but it's all gentrified now, it seems.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. It wasn't.
Yeah. Did you know Phil Collin growing up?
I know him now, but I didn't know him then.
Okay. He grew up in Hackney. That's why I asked you about Hackney.
No, it's nowhere near Hackney.
Yeah.
Hackney was pretty awful then.
Yeah, that's what he said.
It's not now. What was I saying? I can't remember what I was saying. And also because obviously we're Italian, so my mama didn't really have any. They didn't have any English friends.
Right, that's very common. Even growing up in New York City.
My mom to this day doesn't speak English.
Yeah. That's very common.
Yeah, it's just an whole Italian thing. So yeah.
Well, any immigrant, like in New York City, you got people from Korean immigrants, and they have a store, and the whole family works there, and if they hang out with other people, it's Koreans and loads of whenever you don't speak the language native of where you are, that's a very common thing because
the whole thing is because they just have to work.
Yeah.
They don't have a social life.
Right.
So you never go out, they never meet anybody, they don't have dinner with people, people don't come around, anything like that.
Yeah.
And the whole thing's based around, the shop, the restaurant, or the store. Everything's the store.
Yes.
Everything's about that.
Which is tough as a kid growing up in that, because you're like, you're totally removed from that, and you're like, you want to play or do something fun, and it's like, what the hell? Everything's revolving around work. It's different. Yeah.
I kind of liked it. It got to the point where I didn't, because I think my mum particularly sort of encouraged me to play with the other kids in the street. I kind of didn't want to.
Yeah.
I was more comfortable with that. And now it got to a point where I was more comfortable with that. Didn't quite know what I was doing, but it's I was more comfortable with my own company. I mean, and it took a long time to get out of that. That didn't stop until I was about 12, I think, or 13. Suddenly, then I started having friends. Then I became more sociable.
That is a very common thing for guitar players, that they felt really comfortable being alone. And if you think about it, like, that's kind of very conducive to being successful as a guitar player, because you got to sit in that room for hours and hours practicing that instrument, man. And if you're not comfortable with that, that's just not for you.
Yeah, I know. I mean, people are sort of shocked. I mean, that thing, you must try to teach people to play guitar, and you go, okay, but is this going to hurt? And they're shocked. And they go, this bloody hurts. And you go, well, yeah. It does. Well, how long is it hurt for? Well, 6 months.
Yeah.
You mean you have to go? I'm afraid so, yes. Yes. It isn't like, it isn't like programming things.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people go, fuck this, I'm going to go and program it. This doesn't hurt.
Well, how did you get into guitar then? Like, who turned you on to it?
I think suddenly wanted to play Get On. Just wanted to play Get It On.
But like you had one lying around the house or what? What was that?
No, I think my cousin had one and she couldn't play it. And I think my dad suddenly said, your cousin's got a guitar, she can't play it. She doesn't want it. Do you want it? And I said, yeah. And it was just you know, the most horrible nylon string crap. Yeah. No, I didn't know. She, I didn't know anything. And it's like, there was no YouTube, there was no nothing. And, you know, you sort of bought a book. But what was the book? And it's like, there's somebody around who could tell you something.
Sure,
Somehow, somehow just figure it out. And it's like you have to tune it. Well, what do you tune it to? You think, if you've got no ear at all.
Well, you must have had an ear, though. Not that you knew how to tune it, but you obviously had to have an ear. That's what allows you to progress.
Yeah, but, you know, the first day, you go, okay, put your, you know, finger on the fifth fret, and you've got to make that sound like, you know. That doesn't sound like anything. You can't tell the difference between one note and the upper.
Did you take...
sit for hours going, you know.
Did you take lessons, or how did you evolve?
No, I didn't take lessons, no. I think my dad was very insistent that I sort of learned how to read music because he thought that was the key to it all. And it just, I mean, guitar isn't like that, is it? I mean, it's just not like that. I mean, probably it is for piano, I think piano, that is the key to it. But pianos are different, aren't they? They're just laid out differently. You have to learn one bit.
Yeah.
Learn one bit and you've got the whole keyboard. Guitar isn't like that. You can't learn one bit and the rest of it is like that. It changes every time, you know, up and down the neck. The notes are in completely different bloody places.
So, like, did your dad, what happened? Your dad bought you books on reading?
Yeah, I had a book that I just couldn't understand. And I just learned chords. I mentioned I learned chords.
Yeah.
I think I got two strings in tune. You know.
but you spent a lot of time playing.
Yeah, yeah, like every day trying to figure this thing out.
Yeah.
And you it's that thing, I'm not going to let it be me. I'm just not, and you go, oh, I can't do it. But, you know, and you're like, oh, fuck you. But so, you can't. Just go
so
back.
you were very hooked on it early then.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you like about it best?
I think there was that sort of, you know, kind of like, that holy grail in the back, that one day I'll be able to play it. Yeah, I've got to get over this thing, and then one day I'll play it.
So you're driven.
I just get over this one thing that, you know, I'll get over this hill sort of thing, and then I'll be able to go, you know. And of course, that never happens. There's never just that day that.
Yeah.
Oh, what? Phew. Finished. Yeah. And then I can play. Of course, that never happens and never will happen.
No. Once you started playing around in bands, what were some of the bigger surprises for you business wise about the business aspect of being a musician?
Well, no one wants to pay you anything.
Yeah.
At all. Nothing. that was a big surprise early on. I didn't expect to pay lots, but something would be nice. And that is still a surprise because it's going on to this day. And in fact, it's probably got worse, you know, that you should be paid nothing at all. I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
And you kind of, well, I don't think, thank you for your magnificent offer, but I should turn that down, actually. And there's sort of been a sort of surprise. It's like, why? Would you like to do our TV show? Okay, well, what does it play? Well, nothing. Well, on that basis, no, I wouldn't like to do your TV show then.
So that happened a lot back then even?
Funny enough, it happens more now.
No, but I'm saying it happened back then as well. I didn't know it was bad like that. even back then.
It happens more now.
Because
it happens much more now because people, you know, bizarre idea musicians shouldn't be because of the internet and blah blah blah.
Yeah,
and people, you know, people with the downloading thing. It's bizarre things that musicians shouldn't be paid.
It's a very bizarre thing.
And you read about, and I know I shouldn't read comments on you know, magazines or on websites or newspapers. And the first comment you ever read, if anyone's ever reforming, anybody, or doing a new tour, anybody at all, oh, they're just doing it for the money. I don't comment on anybody. And you think, well, are you going to work tomorrow?
Yeah, right.
Well, you're just doing it for the money. You don't really want to do it. I mean, yeah, you're just going to work for the money.
Right. Yeah.
Well, why not? I mean,
no, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, like you're not supposed to do it for free.
Well, I mean, there are very few people, very few musicians who I don't know what the inference is. It's like, they're just doing it for the money. It doesn't mean that they're, you know, on the verge of bankruptcy or have spent everything and are living in cardboard boxes. What it means is that they're probably fairly comfortable, but they now have to go back to work. Like, you're having to go back to work after tomorrow?
Yeah, right. No, it's a very weird thing. I don't know why. I think that has to do with
it's a sneery thing. It's a sneery thing. They're just doing it for the money. Well, yeah.
I think it's a weird thing. I think a lot of people don't. This gets really deep, but it appears that people don't like. A lot of people don't like other people being successful.
No, well, that's been true for.
That's right, exactly, and I think that's a manifestation of that. Like, oh, I think the implication is, oh, they don't need the money; they're only doing it for the money. But you know, the point is, if you do anything, whether it's shovel coal or pick up garbage, or you know, work in a restaurant or be a musician. Why shouldn't you get paid? I mean, like, what does it matter when you walk into a restaurant, you don't say, you know, these fucking guys are only doing this for the money. It's just not a normal. I mean, like, who's thinking that when they walk? Nobody. But it's a weird thing. You're right. With a musician, it's like, I don't know why. I think some of it is the success thing because, you know, they have enough. Well, they're working.
If we were to reform Adam and the Ants tomorrow, which we're not going to do for various reasons, but that would be the first thing. Oh, you must be broke. Well, no.
But why? Why should anybody think of that?
There were degrees between flat broke out and living in a cardboard box and multi millionaire. I mean, sort of fairly sort of. Maybe somewhere, you know.
But that's not even a thought that you should be having. Like, who gives a shit why someone does something? If you want to go to the concert and you feel they're providing value, go. If you don't want to go to the concert and you don't feel you're getting value, don't go. Next, who the fuck has time to you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and a guy's on TV reading the news. Oh, he's only doing it for the money. I mean, it's just bizarre.
I don't look through, there's those sort of, you know, that Reverb site, which I really like, there's sort of people selling guitars.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's a great site.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's some guy selling a Telecaster and he wants, like, you know, whatever it is, like $2,000 for it. He's only selling it for the money.
Of course. What the hell? He's not selling it to like, you know.
Give it away.
Yeah, right. No, it's a weird thing. And I don't think I think it has less to do with musicians and more to do with the envy of people not wanting to see other people. Unfortunately, the envy of people not wanting to see other people prosper for some reason. I don't know what that is, but I don't think that's limited to music.
It's to do with them not prospering.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. People don't like to see other people moving forward. And you know,
with them not moving forward.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I grew up in the Bronx, and I read this book, and I grew up in a very blue collar, what you guys would call, I guess, working class. And I know blue collar means something different over there.
Yeah.
And so I went to school and I became, I was an accountant actually, like a chartered accountant, believe it or not.
Yeah, I read that on that.
Oh, okay, right. So I read this book one time. It was by a guy in Brooklyn, and he grew up, his parents, he was come from a family of bricklayers, and he became a journalist. So it was the same thing. And he wrote this book called Limbo because he said, when you come from a lower income and you work and have an opportunity to be around people that are not in a lower income area, he said, it's a weird feeling. You don't feel comfortable with them. And the people you grew up with aren't comfortable with you anymore. And he said, it's a kind of feeling where you feel like you're in limbo. And I remember reading that, and I read the book. It was a great book. Anybody wants to read it? The guy's name is Al Lubrano, L-U-B-R-A-N-O. And it was a really good book because it was like, man, I felt like that for a long time because the people that you came, they don't want to see you move up. I don't know why. And you don't feel good in this new, and it takes a long time to feel like to figure out, okay, where is my place? Because I'm redefining, you know, my path a little bit. And I think a lot of it has to do with that, what you're talking about. You know, it's hard for people to support other people doing better than them for some reason. I don't know why.
I didn't realize some people had so much problems with making money or fitting in or guilt about having. I didn't really realize it because the few very rich people I know are all musicians. So they all started off like me.
Sure.
Exactly like me. I mean, and worse off than me. So they all started like me. So it all came from nothing or just almost nothing or just, you know, mediocre, you know. So there's no feeling of them being, well, they've got egos, obviously, they wouldn't be there.
But. Well, that's the big mystery to people that come from lower income neighborhoods. The people, most people, and I heard this message growing up, was wealthy people or successful people got that way from stealing. When in my observation of working since I'm 14, so I'm 41 years, it's actually quite the opposite. The people that are successful are actually, most of them, the lion's share, are quite nice.
Yeah.
It's hard to be a dick and make a lot of money. I mean, you have them, but that's not that's the very minority, you know?
Yeah, you have them, or they're a dick in their business. I mean, I don't know. I mean, No one is a musician to make money. It's the last thing you would ever do.
Right. Right. That's not why you become, you may become a musician when you're 12 years old because you want to get girls or because you want to stand on stage, but nobody does it because thinking, oh man, I'm going to be wealthy. Yeah. That's not.
Well, I mean, that's a side issue, but that's not your main, you know.
Yeah. That's not your number one. When you pick up the guitar, you're thinking, oh, okay, this is worth how many, you know, how many strokes to the first dollar, you know, that's not.
Yeah. But even worse than that, even worse than being a musician is probably being a painter. Hey, I'm going to be a painter and make loads and loads of money.
Yeah.
No, that's even worse than being a musician.
Any creative or a writer or, you know, it's like, it's very tough, but I think
Your chances of success are almost zero.
Right, right, right. 100%. You know, you want to become a stockbroker or something. Yeah, you got a good chance. But
it's only because you're a stockbroker. That's what you're supposed to do is make money. Just make anything else.
Yeah, yeah. But it's interesting you said that. It's a very – and I never – even as a kid, I never understood that. Like, I don't – like, I never understood why someone cared what other people were doing. I didn't at the time have an opinion of it's good or bad. I just was like, man, I got a lot of shit on my plate. Who the hell has time to worry about or why someone's, you know, like, why would you waste your time thinking about why Adam and the Ants are getting together?
Yeah, but
you know, like
the problem is that people have always thought these things, but you knew it before. because it, but it's now social media. You can see every single thought.
Yeah, well, that's a mistake too.
You can go on Twitter if one wanted to, and see what every single thought anybody is ever having about you.
You know, it's interesting.
You're responsible for every evil in the world, that you are disgusting, that you're in fact ugly, and you're stupid, and you're fucking hell. I remember just thinking, there's some band I quite like. I think they're called the Decemberists or something like that. They're a Canadian band. I mean, they're nothing. They're not like fucking Kiss or Guns N' Roses. I mean, they're just this kind of like folky band. And it's like, this poor woman is the keyboard player. And she just got this thing about being the ugliest woman in the music business. She's not ugly. There's nothing ugly about her. I mean, it's just a woman who plays keyboards in this band. You just think, fucking hell. Fucking hell. It just... They're clearly not the sort of band who would be like, fuck you, we're going to, show you. this poor woman just wants to play in a band. And it's like, Jesus Christ, you have to put up with that shit?
Yeah, that's rough, man. Well, it's another thing that I think of this because I see people. Imagine now you get in a relationship. So it used to be like, are you religious? Is your religion compatible? Your religious thoughts. Okay, that was one. Then it became now, is your religious and political thoughts? It's, to me, is your social media approach compatible? Because I'll tell you right now, if I was with a person who is on fucking social media all day, and I see people in a couple where the one person's like, you know when it is taking a shit, what they're eating for dinner, what grades their kid got in school, and the other person's never on. And I'm thinking, man, now that's a social media compatibility. That's another.
I'm a virtual recluse compared, and also like stay off all social media because I just can't be bothered. I mean, but Tracy had, also my girlfriend Tracy, when I got together about 5 years ago, she wasn't particularly, she had a Facebook page and that's about it, just to talk to friends. And it's like, right, if you say you're going out with me, you will, just don't, right? But why? Just don't, all right? But, she sort of said, you're not that famous. It's like, yeah, I know, but... And just suddenly they're like deluge of like fucking bullshit, and it's like no. And but even like people just trying to get in and saying things like, we thought you should know that there's someone on a site that's saying horrible things about Marco. Why don't you think I should know? Why did you think I would want to know?
Yeah, man, I don't know. I think
no, we didn't want to know, actually. Thank you. And
we didn't want to know, actually. Yeah, I don't know, man. I think everybody's in everybody's business, man. That's what I don't know. Like, I don't have enough time to take care of my own shit,
And if you're like, Taylor Swift or something, the Kardashians, there's no fucking way. You'd have to have a whole team. Well, they do have a whole team of people. And they can't read every fucking Twitter thing saying that Taylor Swift's got fat ass. I mean, it's just like, 250,000 comments about Taylor Swift's fat ass. I mean, is she really so fucking what? Because none of you have. None of you out there have got fat asses, have you?
Right.
But people have to say something. But it comes with the territory. And it's always like, the great London taxi drivers. Things like, aren't you that bloke? Yes, I am indeed that bloke. And it's like, you used to be I still see you on telly. Cool. You got old.
Are you serious?
Yeah, people say, you haven't, though, have you?
People say that you got old? Holy
Are you joking?
Shit.
Yeah.
Holy crap, man.
They think they're being funny. Sometimes I think that they're just idiotic because they just don't think.
Yeah, that's mean, man.
They used to get in the cabs and people say, cool, you're in that, It's Adam and the Ants. Yeah, bloody hell. That bloke, though, he's a colony.
Holy crap. That's amazing, man.
That's a friend of mine, actually. It's just like, you know, the singer in my band. You think I don't know him or something, you know?
Wow, that's amazing, man.
I know, but ask anyone. They're just stupid, fucking thoughtless things. You know, it's like.
Hey, let's switch topics for a minute. Let's talk about Imagine That guitar.
Oh, well, I just did one more social media.
Yeah.
There's a podcast I listen to. It's like kind of people who have been, I don't know, people who sort of have had Twitter spats or something, and it's like kind of like, and they then have to make up and they talk to each other. And one was Amanda, she's in that, he was in the band Dresden Dolls, and she's married Neil Gaiman. Amanda, something like that.
Neil Gaiman, the artist?
Yeah, Neil Gaiman, the writer, the comic book writer.
Yeah, he wrote Sandman. I'm sorry, he's a writer.
What's his wife's name? Amanda. She's in the Dresden Dolls, or was in the Dresden Dolls.
Don't know.
Anyway, I like her anyway. She did this thing, and it was like, and then there was this girl who did this Twitter, put a post saying, "I hate Amanda Singh, and I hope she fucking dies. I fucking hate her." I can't stand her. And it was like, and she had to talk to like Amanda so and so, and she just went, "Look, I'm really sorry. I did. I just hope you never saw it." And she was like, "I did see it." She went, "Oh my god, I'm so sorry." And it's just like, "I'm so sorry. I just one day, and it was just really bad. And it's just like, I'm so fucking sorry. I don't mean it." And she just said, "Look, I know you don't mean it, but people do see things like that. And it's like, you know, just sort of think about, you know, we're just completely anonymous and not there. And you're talking about Bruce Wayne or something, but it's like, we're not Bruce Wayne.
That's funny, man.
We do see it, and it's like, and she's just, I can't, and I'm so fucking sorry, I'm so fucking sorry, I just can't apologize enough, you know, it's just thoughtless and silly, and, you know.
Wow. I've talked to actually guitarists who've had the same experience, that they have, the people have slammed them on social media,
yeah,
and then they meet them.
And then you go,
they're actually fans.
Yeah.
They're fans, and they meet them, and they'll see the name tag, and they'll say, "Hey, wait a minute, you know, you said some pretty
hard." But you're the bloke who said.
That's exactly what they say. Yeah. And you know what the person says? Every single time, same thing. They said, "Man, I'm really sorry. I'm actually a big fan. I shouldn't have said that. I don't know what came over me. I was having a bad day. The sun was in my eyes. The dog ate my fucking homework." Some litany of excuses, you know.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd ever see it.
Yeah, right. You know, it's something along, but it's always, "I'm deeply sorry. Can you please sign my widget?" You know.
Well, why the fuck should I, actually?
But I mean, this is like,
if you said, "Well, why the fucking hell should I sign your fucking widget?"
I don't know, man. It's just a weird thing.
but don't be like that. Well, why did you? But you just fucking.
That actually happened. There's a guitar player. He was in Nashville. I think he's in Virginia now. He's a great guitar player, country player, called Johnny Hyland. He's blind, actually. He's legally blind, and he plays like a motherfucker. He is so blazing fast. And to say anything other than "you're blind and you became a professional guitar player" is like, there's just no reason for it, you know? And it happened to him, and it, you know, and he's a little heavy, and so they make fun of his weight, and it's like, come on, man, this guy's blind, and he's made like 5 or 6 records, and he's one of the, he constantly gets nominated as the fastest, you know, top 50 fastest, you know, just it, even if he's nobody, but the fact that he's blind and he's playing guitar, come on, man.
People will find anything about you, anything, if you are heavy, if you are bald, if you are. Well, whatever, you know, if you are tall, yeah, he's a tall bastard. Tall is really bad. I mean, it's just, you know.
Yeah. It's weird.
If you are rich, if you are, I mean, whatever it is, you know, it's like, I mean, it does put, you know, you think, like, it would actually put me off. It's like thinking, I wouldn't want to get back into sort of media spotlight. You just think, I wouldn't want to have to deal with this shit every fucking day.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what someone said about you? No, I don't fucking want to know what someone, you know, people feel like they must tell you. I don't know why you feel you must tell me.
Yeah, that's the thing that's weird to me too. Like, why do you feel you need to say that?
Because they want this. It's something. It's a shared experience that they can now be your friend because I've tipped you off about something that you actually don't want to know.
Weird.
You know, if I ran to Pete Townsend and said, listen, I saw a poster on so someone said you had a big nose. Wow. Wow, that was that about me before. Yeah.
Hey man, let's do something crazy and talk about guitars for a few minutes. What are you playing now guitar wise? Or what's your go-to guitar?
My go-to guitar, sadly, boringly, has always been the Les Paul Junior.
Oh, that's a wonderful guitar, man.
It is a wonderful guitar, and it is my go-to guitar.
Do you have it up there with you?
I have one of them.
My double cut. Oh man! So it's a TV yellow, the P90. Yeah. Man, that is so. What year is that?
56. That's
nice. That's so good. That looks great, man.
I have a couple of them.
Where did you get that? Did you get most of your guitars in the UK, over in England, or did you get them here in the States? Or
I got this place in the Valley. It's sort of like. And I bought it in the 80s, and it's a terrible story of stupidity. And I went out to this place in the Valley when the first time I went to LA, and this guy had everything. I don't even think he's there anymore. Somebody's, you know, Valley guitars. And he had everything, and he had every vintage guitar. And he said, I said, have you got any juniors? And he said, yeah, I've got loads. But I keep them out of the back because nobody wants them. And I said, but what about them? My favourite guitars? They're my favourite guitars too, but nobody bloody wants them. So I bought six.
This Holy is shit.
I've only got four left.
Did that guy name a wing after you, after you bought six Les Paul Juniors?
They weren't. You know, they're not the prices they are now. $300-$400 then.
Wow, those are beautiful, man. It's in great condition.
That's because I never played it. I never took it out on the road. I think it was $500. They're like $10,000, yeah, $9,000, yeah, $6,000.
Yeah. What did you take on the road with you usually?
A double cutaway, which is not here. It's in the cupboard. I had two double cutaways, three double cutaways. My first one was it's a white one, and I bought it for £300 in London. Well, I don't know where it came. I don't know what colour it originally was. Someone had sprayed with car spray when I bought it. That's why I got really cheap. But nobody wanted them then. Nobody wanted them.
The double cutaways and the juniors.
Nobody wanted juniors then. And I think people were embarrassed by them because they were for kids, weren't they, when they first came out?
Hey, Leslie West.
Yeah, exactly. But it was him who came out of one, and people went, "Fucking hell, they sound great." They do, and you know, but they were for kids. They were the budget guitar.
Yeah, and those are original. That's all original stuff there. That the 56 that you just had.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. Original,
I cannot believe the shape it's in. It looks really great.
It is original, bit scuffed at the back.
Yeah, it's a bit scuffed, but it looks, you know what, too? That neck looks so thick. Is it a thick neck?
I think there seems to be the double cutaways have thinner necks.
But you can look like you got pretty big hands too, though.
No, not really.
Oh, you look pretty big. Are you tall?
I'm 6 foot tall.
Yeah, well, you look like you got big hands. Like that, I wouldn't be able to play that. It looks really, because I'm only 5'9". My hands are average. That looks like a big thick neck.
It's quite a thick neck. Yeah, it is quite a thick neck. Yeah, it is. It's like a sort of. It's getting towards a sort of Gretschy sort of neck. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's before they
Beautiful guitar, man.
It's not a fast neck. It's not a Les Paul neck.
And so on stage, you always played a double Les Paul cutaway.
Yeah, double cut Les Paul.
Yeah, double cut Les Paul.
I mean, I like the one pickup. I like the not having to switch.
Yeah.
I also, I like, this has been explained to me, and I think it's true. Because there's no spring, there's no, the pickup is just screwed to the body.
Yeah.
I can do all that, and it's just extremely expressive. Sometimes, too, they feed back a lot, which is good. Because, you know, like, old Les Paul spent years trying to get them not to feed back.
Right. What amp are you playing out of now? What did you play out of back in the day?
I had, and I still got them, two old Fender Twins. Yeah. I mean, I had a Marshall as well, but I used to use a Marshall, but it was too loud.
Too big. And what did you play on the road, the Fender Twin?
Yeah, two Fender Twins. Two Fender Twins.
It's funny, man. Everybody pretty much uses the old Fenders as the standard of for amplifiers in general.
I mean, it's a bizarre thing. I always found Marshalls were sort of too loud. They were too loud in a strange sort of way. They were sort of, you had to get really, really far away from them to hear them. Mm. Unless you were, I don't know how metal bands do it, like Walls and Marshalls. They could be able to hear anything.
What did you call Adam and the Ants? What kind of music would you classify that as?
Who knows?
Because that's kind of like the same. It's like that's what television was, except it was in the United States.
Well, I guess we were weren't as cerebral as television because we weren't trying to be. I mean, it was pop music, glam bass.
Yeah, right. Adam Ant was glam bass pop. That's a really good one. Television was not glam.
Glam bass pop with soundtrack things thrown in. It was just like kind of like, and trying to merge sort of elements that have never been put together. And people always ask, maybe it was just like, well, why does it have like kind of like Wayne Eddy guitars in it? I don't know. It's always that. It's like, why did you want to do that? I don't know. I just thought it'd be good. That's the only answer you can ever give for doing something, making artistic decisions. I just thought it'd be a good thing to do. What statement are you trying to make? Well, nothing. I mean, just sort of a good thing to do. That's all.
Is that people say, what statement were you going to make? Yeah, I always, like, I would never ask that question. I would also never ask another one I hear in interviews, where do you get your ideas from? Or like, what's your muse or something like that? I've heard that one.
I never answer that muse. Like, fashion designers have muses, don't they? They have to have some woman around.
I don't know.
They actually pay, like, you know, Catherine Deneuve.
Be my muse. We're hiring for a muse.
Without Catherine had been around, that Yves Saint Laurent couldn't do anything. And if she went to the toilet or anything, he would freak out.
What did the job ad look for that? You know, what did the want ad say? Muse wanted.
Impossible, self-obsessed nonce. Thinks he needs some woman to sit about as we can't do anything.
Unreal, man. Hey, let me ask. Yeah. Have you ever sold a guitar that you wish you can get back?
Yeah, all my juniors that I sold, yeah.
All your what? The two juniors.
I don't know why I would want five. There was just five of them. I don't know why I would want.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
I do that thing, and it's not. It's supposed to be cathartic.
Yeah.
When you go and kind of reverb, and you can like fill up your basket with every single junior you see, you think, well, why would you want so many? And it's just, I just do, and it's just day.
Oh, so you're still buying juniors when you see them?
No, I haven't, because they're too bloody expensive.
Oh, they're super expensive, man.
Yeah, too expensive. I understand that prices have gone up since 1982. to, and I have to pay, but not like bloody hell. No, I'm not paying for 6,000, 5,000.
Well, if you didn't have one or two or four, maybe, but you know.
Yeah, but if you didn't all have one. In fact, I found this the other day, I didn't know I had, which is.
So that's like that's a cutaway.
Yeah, but it's a new one. Look, it's got a horrible bridge on it.
Oh, that's right. So that's a new one. How does that sound?
It sounds all right, actually, because I put bare knuckle pickups, which are really good.
A lot of people like, they're out of Ireland or England?
England.
Yeah, there are a lot of people use those. I'm seeing more and more people.
I don't know where I got this guitar from or how long I'd had it, but when I moved house, I suddenly found it.
It's like finding some people find a $20 bill in their wallet. You find a guitar,
but it's got this on it, and I must have hidden it because I don't like this.
Oh, the bridge.
Yeah, because it's modern. Yeah. I've never listened to it because I immediately had a bare knuckles put on it.
What kind of pickup is it? Do you know?
They're the P90 kind of.
Oh, it's a bare knuckle P90.
One of their, you know.
Yeah.
I can't remember which ones they are, but. So I think it sounds really good now, but I'm going to send it off to have a tremolo arm put on because there are some of them did have tremolo arms, like factory fitted tremolo arms.
Oh, okay, like a Bigsby.
Only because hopefully it'll just cover up this bloody hole. And then I'm going to have it relicked as well. I'm going to pretend it's old.
The color looks pretty good though. That your television yellow looks good.
Yeah, but it's not real. It's not like a real television yellow. For a start, it's not varnished. So I'm going to have it like relics and made to look old, and I'm going to pretend it's old, tell people it's old. But but as I now announce, it's not really real.
Now put it on social media. Hey, I just picked up a new 56 double cutaway. What Desert Island Discs? So when I say Desert Island Discs, I don't mean singles because I know in the UK there's a program.
Yeah.
So what
would be my favorite? What album would I take with me?
Top three, yeah. Just for right now, because I know I could ask you that question.
My favorite album all time that I would definitely wouldn't go anywhere without is For Your Pleasure by Roxy Music.
I have not listened to that. I'm going to check it out.
It is my favorite album of all time. And I tell many people, I've told many Adam and the Ants fans, oh, you must go and listen to this. It's so strange. They go, you know, man, Kings Rough and Teal, Pinch on whatever it is. It's like, that's my favorite album of all time. It's my Desert Island Disc. And I go, well, that's amazing. And that's really, well, mine is For Your Pleasure. Then they go, and the same sort of thing as Darcy. Well, look, I've listened to that album that you said, like, it's not all that, really. And what do you mean it's not all that? It's not as good as your album. Then you say, oh, well, I'm not quite sure how to react to that, really.
Yeah, I would imagine that's weird.
Yeah.
What would be number two? Have you ever played with Brian Ferry?
No, never even met him.
Huh. See, I ignorantly thought all the UK musicians know each other.
I wouldn't be able to speak.
No, that's like when people meet my wife, they say, "Oh,
I can't speak."
They go, "I have a friend in England. Do you know her? or do you know him?" And she's like, "You know, it's like everybody thinks people in England, they all know each other."
Yeah,
because there's only like 200 people there.
All of them know Brian Ferry.
Yes. They do.
No, I've never met Brian Ferry, but I've seen him around. You see, people have actually, was it Peter York who said, like, Brian Ferry's something like the kind of the prime example of the ultimate art-directed existence, like everything he does is sort of art-directed.
It's artsy.
Well, no, everything, every time you see him, he's sort of like, oh, he's sort of perfect in the way that he should be.
Bowie was like that.
Not always. Bowie, sometimes you see him in shorts and things, and you've never seen Brian Perry in shorts. And it's like, every time I've seen him a couple of times, and people have always said to me, like, yeah, every time I've seen him, he looks exactly how he should be doing a Brian Perry thing. Like, you know, sipping cocktails behind. I literally, first time I ever saw him, was like this. I managed to get, there's another anecdote. We got into this after punk, while punk was still going on, and we were trying to reject punk in 1978 or 9. We got into a really shishy club called the Embassy. I don't know how we got in, but now I do know how we got in, because I realised that Steve Strange, I was with, was selling coke. But I didn't know that he was. We weren't doing coke; we were just selling it. But that's how we got in. I just thought he just said, "Oh well, they all know me here."
Into what Embassy?
I thought he was just in this club called the Embassy. Oh, the thought he was just here. I didn't know he was just selling coke. Anyway, and I sort of looked around, and I saw Brian Ferry behind some palm trees with a cigarette and everything. Oh my God! And people, I mean, I do have this theory that he sort of gets up and knows where he's going to be, and kind of like arranges furniture so he looks just right.
Let's put that out there. Brian, if you're listening, advise us. Are you arranging furniture in your your environment?
Yeah, so that it looks, everything looks perfect for you. If anyone should ever see you.
That's funny, man. So what's your second album, number two?
I think Aladdin Sane. I don't know, it's a toss-up between Aladdin and Sane. I'm not sure which my favourite Bowie album. I mean, kind of all of them. I mean, a lot of that mid-70s period, everything from Ziggy Stardust to Heroes, really, all of them, all of those.
The Mick Ronson period.
Definitely Mick Ronson. In fact, that is what made me want to play guitar, really, I think.
Mick Ronson?
Yeah.
Great player, man. Great player, man.
But people have only been citing him. Only people from my age have been citing him. People didn't like him. I didn't like him, but he wasn't taken seriously.
You know what? Here in the States, everybody. I mean, when I was a kid, everybody always really thought highly of Mick Ronson.
No, well, when I was a kid, all my friends thought he was, because he just had that sound and it just
so good.
But he wasn't up there with Jimmy Page's and all that.
Oh no, never.
Because he wasn't quite like that. But
well, he wasn't in a guitar band. He was Bowie was the act. You know, he was a side man.
Yeah.
In a sense.
But also, but he made those albums. He made those two albums.
Great player.
Without him, those albums wouldn't be. I don't know. That'd be something else. I mean, I'm sure it'd be good in other ways because the songs are great. But without those two albums, they were the albums that made me want to play guitar. And I think that's probably true. Maybe I don't know. Was it true of like the guys from Def Leppard or a lot of guys from Steve Stevens or that?
Yeah, I don't know. I had Steve and Phil on my show. It was funny talking to them. They're like what you said earlier, about people at the top, very nice, very easygoing, very open, very laid back.
Well, people, what else have they got to say, really?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it was just easy talking to them, really. It's like talking to some guy you grew up with in your neighborhood or something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think I have met Phil, actually. He was at Paul Cook's house. So Paul Cook was playing drums with him in some band. But, yeah, it was like some bloke from school, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's really easy going.
Yeah, so once,
number three.
Transformer. Of course, Transformer, wasn't it? I'd like to put Quadrophenia in there, but it won't fit with it. So it'd have to be those three.
You can get a bonus, so it'll be Quadrophenia. Great record, man.
Yeah.
All right, man. This is a tough question. What do you like most about yourself, Marco?
I'm really glad I'm tall. The only thing I wouldn't change. I don't actually want to be any taller or any shorter. I have only recently, possibly in the last 10, 15 years, learned to sort of, you know what, you're sort of all right, really. You know, you're pretty good. You're better than a lot of people. Doesn't mean you're fucking greater than everybody, you're just better than some.
That's the number one answer I get for guys over 50 and 60, really. It's like I'm comfortable in my own skin now.
Except for that guy from traffic.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't too happy.
I didn't really know. Someone said that to me. I was like, oh, you seem sort of comfortable in your own skin. I don't know what that means, but I think I do know that.
You're accepting yourself. You're good with who you are.
Well, I haven't really got, but you wouldn't accept yourself if you're a twat, basically. Which,
there's certain words that you guys use that we don't that are hysterical.
That's a good word. But I mean,
twat is one of them.
Dave, the guy from traffic possibly doesn't accept himself because he knows what he is, or maybe doesn't know what he is. I mean, I haven't been thrown out of loads of bands. Had I been thrown out of loads of bands, after the third one, I might start thinking, is it me?
Yeah, it's kind of like getting married. You know, if you have like three marriages and they all go bad, you got to start looking and say, you know, maybe it's not for me, or maybe there's something I need to look at before I go to number four, you know?
Yeah, Matt, but it's the thing that people just don't get it. Just don't. Is it, you know?
Yeah.
No, the whole world is against me.
I always look for me, like even on the first thing, because I don't like to feel like a victim. And if it's me, then it's like, okay, I messed up. Let me just figure out how to fix it so I don't do it again. And I don't feel
I never thought anyone was against me. I mean, maybe occasionally, but I mean, not. Why? Why would anyone be against me? And you know, if they are, then bollocks to them. And I just, you know. Yes, I mean, very, very occasionally. But, and I don't really, I'm not sort of really obsessed about like revenge or getting them back. I mean, what? Hopefully one day I will be in a position to really, really, really humiliate them. I tell you what, it's really good. It is that sort of the feeling of, be careful in your sort of way up and, you know.
This guy in Muscle Shoals, you know, it's a big recording studio, big Muscle Shoals. Are you familiar with that? In Alabama, it was a studio. Yeah. And there was a guy there, Barry, I'm having a brain fart and I'm really sorry about that. He was one of the founders of the studio and he had a sign on the door. One of the players who worked for him told me, he said, be careful whose toes you step on the way up, because they will be attached to the ass you need to kiss on the way down.
Yeah. So I have had those wonderful, wonderful, beautiful experiences of, like, you know, the bloke is a fucking arsehole, you know, it's like 2 years, and then like 2 years, like a year, like you meet them and they kind of want to grow up and they go, oh yeah, hi, you know, it's like, so what are you up to? And you go, you know, well, nothing, you know. What are you up to? Oh, we're doing, you know, some fucking shit club. And you go, wow, that's good, isn't it? Fuck you. They know what you're doing. It's like, fuck off.
Yeah, man, being nice is the easiest option.
Well, I'm not nice. I'm just not anything. I just don't give a fuck. It's them. They know what they've done and they know where they are.
Yeah, man. What's the happiest moment or happiest time in your life?
I've been doing Sinead too, you know. That was a really good. That was a really happy experience. I mean, she wasn't particularly happy. but that was a happy experience. I mean, I haven't been ecstatically happy. I'm not a complete belligerent idiot. I mean, I have to ride this bicycle so I can get really, really thin to be like David Bowie. I was actually thinking the other day, what would you say in your deathbed? You know, like, I would say, well, you know, sort of time to die now. I'd say, well, okay, that was really good. Can I go around again?
So that's good.
Yeah. I said, do you want to change anything? I said, no, not really. I just want to go around again.
That's good then, man.
I said, well, that's it. Well, can I go around? I want to go around again. Well, that was really good, most of that. I want to go around again.
That's
like,
good.
I want to go around the ride again.
Yeah, I get it. That's really good.
I said, no. I said, well, no, bollocks. I want to go around again. It has been actually, you know, compared to most people, I was fucking hell. It's just really, moving to the country, which has been a fucking nightmare.
You're in the country now.
Yeah. Can you see out the window? That's fucking horrific.
Oh, that's right, because you're a city guy.
Yes.
Oh, man, nothing but trees.
Oh, fucking hell, a nightmare. Look at it. The horror. I mean, it is just fucking awful. But so you just want to get back to real life, and you've always had that thing about people have had this thing about you don't know what real life is really about.
Who, you?
But generally, you know, people like
You were successful guitarist
but people like us, well, you or me, we don't know what real life is. I mean, fucking do know what real life is about. You know, it's like, you know, what do you think? You know, it's like bands on tour, you know, rock stars on tour, what real life doesn't encroach when you don't sell any tickets? What do you think? What happens then to real life? It doesn't affect anybody when you can't pay the bills?
Perception of what it means to be a successful artist is really, you know, people think it's just champagne and caviar, and they don't understand the work behind it, and they don't understand the failures and the highs and lows that everybody else experiences.
Yeah, but I mean, no one's complaining. I'm saying, but don't tell me it's not real. You know, Don't tell me it's all. We don't have to deal with shit every day. Everybody has to deal with shit every day. Don't tell me it's all just happens. And it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, when things are down, you got to sell your guitars to pay your rent. I mean, you know, that's everybody's had a go.
That's a thing. You can have security. You can have security, but that means you don't have freedom.
Interesting.
I won't have security then.
Yeah. Well, explain that. What do you mean by that? You could have security, but you don't have freedom.
Well, you can have, but which is something I have noticed, which is like coming here and encountering what I think they mean by real life, which I've never really thought about, because I never fucking cared. and now I don't care even fucking less about it. So people go to work every day, you know, and it's like, you know, well, if that's what you want to do, do it. I mean, I don't care. But it's like, you know, you have that security. You get with it, but in fact, it isn't that secure anymore, is it?
No, not at all.
No.
Not at all.
It's that secure. It's almost as insecure as what we do, really.
To some extent, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So you have that mortgage and everything. So if you can't pay that, you get turfed out. Fucking hell. It's like, so if you lose that job, you have to find another one. It's like, I mean, I don't have to. I can't find another job, so I don't have a job in the first place.
Yeah,
I can't be anything else. I can't do anything else. I just have to be. Just I've got. It is that sort of freedom that you have when you realise you're completely fucking useless. So you're free.
Well, you just have this thing you like doing, and that's it. And that's what you're trained for, and that's what you're good at.
You're not even trained for it. It's just what it's the only thing you can do.
That's right. That's right.
Anything you want to do. So So in a sense, you kind of, you know, it's a bit like Charles Manson, isn't it? You sort of like, as soon as you put that swastika on your forehead, you've X yourself from society, haven't you? It's like, that's it, I'm never coming back. And I mean, some people do, and it's like some people can, I can't. Hmm. I don't know how. And unfortunately, just at the moment, I don't need to. Maybe I never will. Hopefully, I don't think I will. What am I talking about? I don't know. It's like, if you do have this great job and everything, which is somebody else's job, because you're not the boss. If you're not the boss, then it's like you're beholden to other people. And you always got to do what you're told, and you can't just not go in one day because you don't feel like it.
Yeah, it's no, you can't.
Because you're not going to get paid, because people are pissed off with you. Then you get fired, quite rightly, because you made a commitment which you're not holding up. I can't do that, and it's like, yeah. But you have some security. You're going to get paid.
Sure, I totally get it now. What you're saying.
Yeah.
And
it's also a bit like sort of sportsman, isn't it? It's like that thing I was always thinking. It's like the worst thing in the world, having to be like a sportsman or a runner or something, and having to wake up at 4 a.m. and it's raining or snowing, and you think, oh bollocks, I've got to get up.
No, but they love it.
Yeah,
just like you playing the guitar.
Yeah. But it'd be very different if it was somebody else's thing. It's like, I really don't want to get up and go for my run, but it's my thing. Yeah, my thing. It's not somebody else making me do it.
Right.
It's self-directed. Me making me do it.
Right.
And it's the last thing you want to do, but it's your thing.
No, that would not be good if it's the last thing you want to do.
It's just the last thing, but it's yours. It's yours. It's me making me do the last thing I ever want to do. It's somebody else doing it.
As opposed to somebody else doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, last question. Marco, what's been the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years? And has it been intentional or just a natural part of it?
No, it's never intentional. I can't change my personality intentionally. Some people can. This is a really good thing. I think I've become – I think most people disagree. I think slightly more humble and more practical. That's not true.
You're negotiating with yourself on this answer, man.
I was more comfortable with the world until I came here, and I'm really definitely uncomfortable with the world.
How long have you been in the country there?
4 years, but it was, you know. I don't know, it seemed like a good idea at the time, but it was a way of getting out of a rut. It wasn't something I'd sort of it was sort of like throwing myself into something. That was another thing I'd do. It's like, but sometimes staying in ruts, you know, might be quite a nice rut. And it's like, and now I kind of know the person I should be, which is, I'm a city person.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I know I keep going. I want to go back to London. It doesn't have to be like that.
You think you'll be going back to the city?
Oh, every day, yeah. That's definitely. But unfortunately, you know, property prices being what they are.
Oh, it's crazy, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like London has now overtaken Tokyo. For fuck's sake.
Oh, it's crazy, man. Any city is just, you know, it's especially London, New York, L.A.,
yeah, and I am Tokyo. Not. I am not going to have one bedroom flat.
Dunstable's still pretty reasonable.
Yeah. Okay. there was a gig in Dunstable. There's some really good footage. There's some really good pictures of the Sex Pistols playing Dunstable.
You're kidding me.
No.
The Sex Pistols playing Dunstable.
Oh, yeah, there was a big gig at Dunstable. I think Bowie played it as well. Dunstable sang over.
The Dunstable Downs?
Yeah, it was on Dunstable Downs.
Okay. I'm going to have to look that up. That's hilarious.
There's some really good color some good, really good color pictures of Pistols playing Dunstable.
Is it on YouTube or is it pictures?
Video? No, it's not. There's only pictures.
Okay.
I think it's called Dunstable California Ballroom.
I'm gonna look at that. That's really funny. You want to hear something? Really, remember I mentioned a guy named Anto Drennan, the guy in Ireland.
Yeah.
Anto grew up in Dunstable. He lived like six blocks from where my wife lived as a young girl. How weird is that? Yeah, he's a few years older than us, but what are the chances? I mean, it's the more people I speak to, the more I realize what a small world this is and how
small world.
How connected. Touche.
Yeah.
Man, no,
it is unbelievable. I mean, my first night in New York, I went to some bar. Bizarrely, I saw Chris Bedding there, who I didn't have the guts to speak to.
You're kidding me.
No, I know. Because I had now the legitimacy. I am too a rock star, and I can. Hello, Chris. I'm a big fan. Blah blah blah. I just didn't have the guts.
How random is that? That you see another guy from England, another musician, in the same bar.
There's more random than that. Is a guy came up to me and said, "Hello, are you?" Yeah, and I said, "Yeah." Did you used to go to, this school? Yeah. Did you used to walk through the station to get home? Yeah. Oh, do you remember like a bunch of teddy boys used to hang out at the station? I said, yeah. I said, oh, we used to call you Anchor and stuff.
Holy crap.
That was me, my mates. Oh, great. Well, hello. Yes, it's really nice to see you again. Great.
Wow.
How wonderful to see you again after all these years. Would you like a drink, you fucking wanker? It's just like, what's the point of coming up to me and saying,
yeah, that's weird. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. You can also watch it on YouTube and subscribe to our channels there. I want to thank Marco Peroni very much for spending time with us. This guy is a legend, and we're happy he's successful. Thanks, Marco. I appreciate it. Make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get on our newsletter list so you and I can connect. And most important, you'll like this. Remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. Marco, thank you for everything. I'm out.
I'll see you later, Craig.
We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.